dindily dong, come on.
I don't believe it.
You missed that.
Miller, lovely cushion header. But Gerrard! Oh, you beauty! What a head shot! What a head!
Remember the name, Wayne Rooney.
It's Torres to get Chelsea a place in the Champions League final. The headline has been written.
Unbelievable!
Look at this, Kevin. It's a brilliant run from Messi. Can he go all the way?
They think it's all over. It is now.
Hello, guys. Welcome back to Talk from the Terraces with Adam and Kyle. We are joined by my colleague on Forever Forest TV, Danny, this week. Hello, mate.
What the? That's
it. Did you watch any of the Premier League?
You are
Premier League this week,
right? That's the show. See you later.
That's it. See you later. Do you know what the biggest shock for me this weekend was? That Sunderland won 4-0 last week and then got spanked 4-0 this week by Southampton.
But did you watch the highlights on any of the game or anything? Because they were
bad. Yeah, of course. They Gabby Adini's on it, mate.
Yeah, wow.
What a signing.
Good fox in a box, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. With Sunderland, their fans went home half time.
I thought the City ground was empty week after week, but my God.
Yeah,
that place is more Red Sea.
Southampton had more fans than something by the end of the game.
Yeah, I think you're probably right.
Shocking. Results. Right, we just get this out of the way. This is like a terrible start, like structurally. Anyway,
This is not as terrible as what we've had trying to get Wickers involved in this. So
yeah, we should have recorded that because it's taken 45 minutes for Adam to even get in a call. So
yeah, I'm sorry.
Taliban anyway, broadband.
Lunchtime, 12 o'clock on Saturday. We had Arsenal beat Hull 2-0. Any thoughts from anyone?
Sanchez handballed the ball and Hull was probably in it a lot more than people think, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Hull played better than Arsenal did, and I think they deserved at least a point, if not more, out of the game. Arsenal just got lucky, but at the end of the day, if that happens for your team, you'd take it any day of the week. So yeah. I mean, it wasn't exactly deliberate handball, was it? So it wasn't as like punched it into the goal and then ran off celebrating to give it him. I mean, it took like two deflections, hit him in the arm and went in. So in one way, I can kind of accept it.
Yeah, moving on. United beat Watford 2-0. United
should have been about 9. It should have been about 9-0.
Yeah.
Like Gomez was on it in the first half and just couldn't get... No one could score past him. Yeah. I think Ibrahimovic missed an open goal as well second half.
Yeah, he should have gone with his head. He should maybe gone for a diving header or something. He kind of just stuck his foot out, which was a bit weird. Like, the technique was poor, in all fairness, but I'm not going to criticise him. I mean, he's top goal scorer in the league. Middlesbrough 0, really. Everton 0. Well, we'll just breathe over that. That's just shit, isn't it, really? We're not going to talk about
I'd be disappointed as an Everton fan because, like, the week before, they scored 6 and Lukaku was, like, on it. And I said this to you last week, Kyle, about Lukaku, about... One week he's absolutely amazing, and then the next week he just had an absolute dry spell.
Yeah, go on.
The consistency with Lukaku is a big issue for me. As in, like, if you ever come onto the topic of is Lukaku a world class player, I don't think he is because the consistency isn't there.
No. He's got potential though.
He has potential, and maybe he's in the wrong team to develop him into a world class player, which he probably is. But still. To provoke teams to buy you, you need to be consistent, which he is in and out.
Yeah, I think for me, with Lukaku, I think he can't really go above Everton, you know, especially in the Premier League. If you're looking at the top four sides, I don't think he gets into any of them. I mean, the sort of only team I would say he would maybe get into is maybe Liverpool, but even then, like, would you deem them a top four side, really?
I would this season. I think I would this season. I think they've gone through a dry spell, but I think they have the potential. If there's strength in the squad and depth, they'd definitely be a top four team because the philosophy is good.
Yeah.
I think Lukaku would probably suit at Liverpool because he does run the channels and he's a pretty hard worker for the type of striker he is. I also think he could even get into United when Ibrahimovic and Rooney decide to go. I think he could probably work there. He is a good striker. I just think it might be... depending on the team around him, like you say. I don't know. Everton are hit and miss as well anyway.
All right, moving on. Stoke.
Wow.
That was not like, not saying that was, oh, just, Adam's
that
point
was just,
shy.
That was literally was like your opinion is not valid. Moving on. No, so
not
funny.
At all.
That was so
I just
funny.
Thought, you know, we got plenty of results here, but fucking hell. All right, yeah, whatever. Stoke 1, Crystal Palace 0.
The Welsh Xavi scored.
Do you know what? The two teams that are really just struggling, aren't they, to get any momentum at all in this league.
Yeah, we've Palace.
Well, Stoke are ninth, which isn't really
compared to how they have been. I mean, there's no like last season they were pretty decent, weren't they? I mean, you'd pick them against any team and say they could get a result really, but this season it's like they don't even go on my accumulator. So that's how I look at it.
Agreed there. Like midway through the season last season, I'd say Stoke were probably pushing for a European spot. This season, I don't think they'll get anywhere near it.
I can't call them worse off or anything.
I just think they're very inconsistent.
I mean, whenever I see whoever they're playing each week when the fixtures are there, I'm just looking at it thinking, I don't even know whether you're going to win, lose, or draw. Like, I can't even call it. Like, whereas last season, I'd be like, oh, yeah, this team, yeah, they'd definitely beat them. Whereas this season, I can't even do that. That's where I'm at with them.
I don't want to say moving on.
Definitely
sorry. I might get bollocked. Yeah, Southampton 4, Sunderland 0. We already talked about that. West Ham 2, West Brom 2.
It was a cracking game.
Yeah, really good game, that.
Lanzini scored a really nice second goal. I can't remember his first goal in particular. And then I know West Brom scored a last-minute winner, equaliser, should I say, and Bilic was going mental. He was like halfway down the touchline.
Yeah, Bilic was going insane, wasn't he? I mean, all the points he raised were during the live game. It was like, I could sympathise with him, but after seeing everything, I was like, it's a bit out of order, really, because every decision was right.
It's harsh. It's hard to see, obviously, to the naked eye at that point, isn't it? I understand like how hard it is for referees, and he even said it in his interview how hard it is to be a referee, and he could sympathise. It's just one of those things, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Liverpool beat Tottenham 2-0 in the evening game.
Liverpool
a really, really good bounce back, but I think Mane was the difference there. Well, obviously he was 2-0, won them the game.
Massive difference.
They played amazing. Like, Tottenham didn't get a sniff.
No, I think Mane must have had about 7 shots on his own in the first half.
Yeah, he could have had 4 or 5 himself, in all fairness. Yes,
definitely. But yeah, Liverpool look like they're getting back to their best now. So,
yeah. What do you think Liverpool are missing?
I think they're missing.
Obvious.
I think personally for me the depth of the squad is the issue. I mean, they haven't got depth and quality. I mean, other teams, when they go on a bit of a wobbly patch, they can bring other players in to freshen it up. They have the same quality. Liverpool don't have that. They don't have any depth in the quality, as far as I'm concerned. You get rid of Coutinho and Mane and whoever else keeps them ticking by, and I just don't think that there's anybody to do that same job for them.
Yeah, I think if Coutinho, Mane, or Firmino are missing out that team, they automatically just don't look they don't look as good straight away. Even with Lallana as well. But I think for me the issue is at the back, with the goalkeepers and the back four especially. I mean, you've got Nathaniel Clyne, who I'd probably say is a solid right back, but left back you've got a makeshift player in Milner, who he does a job and he's been really good, but he's not. You know, if Liverpool are looking at winning the title maybe next season, that's a position they've got to strengthen on. And then the two centre halves as well. I mean, Clavan, he's not really.
I don't like Clavan.
I'm not saying he's terrible, but he's not. For me, he's not a typical Liverpool centre half. Same with Matip. I mean, Matip is not a bad player now, but if they're really seriously considering winning the league next season, then they've got to go out and spend maybe 40 million on the back four.
I agree with that, and the goalkeeper situation just laughable. They're just, rather than going out and buying a young buck that's coming up and through, unless it's a David De Gea like United did, you've got to just go out and say, who is one of the best keepers in Europe at this moment in time, if not the world? We're just going to splash the cash, like you said, on the back four, just do it on the keeper and just go, there you go, we've got a world class keeper, he's going to get us 12 points a season, standard.
Yeah, that's what happened to Arsenal last season. I mean, obviously didn't capitalise on it, but Arsenal looked a much better side compared to the season before with Cech in goal. But like to sort of say with the goalkeeper, they got Danny Ward out on loan at Huddersfield, and he's quality.
I don't really know that much about him, to be fair.
I mean, a left field shout would have been Tom Heaton at Burnley. Tom Heaton's a class goalkeeper.
He is a good goalkeeper.
I think he's very good. He's always been in and around the England team. I mean, I'm pretty sure if you chucked 10 million at Burnley, they'd have snapped your hand off for him. But maybe not, maybe a little bit more, obviously, because of price and fluctuation and all that sort of stuff with money and that. But he's a pretty good goalkeeper.
I agree with you. I mean, he's had some outstanding performances this season. I don't want to dwell on it too much, but I definitely agree. Tom Heaton's a much better keeper than people give him credit for.
Going back to Crystal Palace for a minute before we move on to Sunday. Do you really think Big Sam can keep Palace in the league this season?
I think they've got the players to do it, but they're hitting a brick wall at the moment. Like, you think of players like Zaha and Puncheon and Benteke should be players that will produce a lot more.
I think they're hitting a brick wall at the time that another team's hitting the track running, because Swansea are smashing it at the moment, and I think it's just unfortunate for them. It could be roles reversed.
Yeah, I think they've got to take some confidence into it that Leicester are starting to really look a team that could get relegated this season.
They've also got
to look at, you know, Hull, who are, you know, they're a similar sort of side. They've got some good players in there, and they've just got a new manager in. And then even with Middlesbrough as well, where they just don't score enough goals. So there are going to be a couple of teams at least that are going to be below them. It's just whether they can get out of that bottom three.
Yeah.
I think Hull and Sunderland will actually survive, and I think Middlesbrough and Leicester will drop in.
That's your opinion. What about you, Dan? What do you think?
I think with the resurgence that Swansea have had, I think Swansea could keep pushing, because they just seem to have clicked really well. And I know they had a lot of ground to make up, but I think they can make it up. At the moment, I can see Leicester dropping in. And I can see Crystal Palace going with it, to be fair. It's a difficult one, because that on its own is like a mini league, isn't it?
Definitely. Yeah. The bottom six or bottom seven, if you include Bournemouth as well, they're starting to become really interesting.
Yeah. It's almost as interesting as actual winning the league, isn't it, really?
Yeah, well, I think Chelsea, it's pretty much said and done now. I mean, they did sort of drop 2 points yesterday, but Burnley played pretty well. But we'll get on to that in a second. To reiterate my point, I think that Leicester, like you two guys think, I think they'll drop into the bottom three. Whether they'll get back out again, I can't see it right now, because Mahrez is not playing well, Vardy's not playing well, they haven't got Kante this season, they've not replaced him either, and their back four are starting to, you know, look like the average back four that they are, because, you know, in all fairness, Danny Simpson was a failed player at, what was it, Newcastle was he at? And then, you know, Rob Hoof, who was all right at Chelsea the first time around, but wasn't really a world beater. And then Wes Morgan, who we've had at Forest in the past, he didn't really look good for Forest, and all of a sudden last season he was world class. So I think they're getting found out. Moving on to Sunday, like I just mentioned before, we've got Chelsea, who were 1-0 up against Burnley, but somehow, well, not drop points, but I think Burnley just really played well to get back into the game.
Burnley were excellent. I watched the game, and I remember the free kick for Brady, before he stepped up, I was like, I think this could go in. This has got a good chance of going. And anyway, with Barton and Brady stepping over it, and it was a pinpoint free kick. And to be fair, Burnley actually had quite a lot of good half chances, whereas Chelsea they couldn't get through. Burnley were so organised and resolute that there was just nothing for them. It was so difficult.
Yeah, like for me, after Chelsea went up 1-0, was it after like 10 minutes or something like that?
Before that, five, I think.
For me, when a team scores early on against a team that, you know, when a title sort of side is going, playing that way, against other teams, I would say, oh, they're going to score four or five here. But against Burnley yesterday, I couldn't see that happening at any point. Just going down 1-0, I think, was a kind of a bit of a blip.
Hmm.
I didn't watch it. I was away, wasn't I? I was away last yesterday. I've got absolutely zero to comment on the Chelsea game because I didn't see it. I haven't seen it. I didn't even know what the score was before you guys started talking about it. So yeah, well, that was bad. My bad.
there was just times where Burnley had like little half chances. There was one where I can't remember who played the ball, but Ashley Barnes went through or Andre Gray went through. And it was just like one of those times where I think if he was playing against someone else other than like anyone in the top six, he may have took a touch and banged it in. And I think he just thought, I've only got so much time to hit this. And he hit it straight away and it was just tame at Courtois. But Burnley had so many little opportunities like that where the ball just didn't drop or the player just rushed the shot and didn't really test Courtois out too much. I think Burnley could have definitely nicked it because David Luiz was having one of his moments.
I think Burnley have been amazing this season. I know I didn't see the game, but I really like Burnley this season. I hate the kit, but I love them.
They've got the third best home record this season, yeah, which is pretty good.
I hate the kit.
I hate Burnley.
I just hate the kit. I think
the stadium. I'm not sure if I hate Burnley or if I just hate the stadium that bad.
I hate the stadium. I hate the kit.
Pretty bad.
Don't like the kit.
Move on to the championship. Was there all the fixtures on Saturday? I'm not sure.
So there was one on Friday night.
Okay, who was that?
I think that was Sheffield Wednesday against Birmingham. And I think they won 1-0, maybe.
Okay.
I'm just checking now. 3-0. So absolutely convincing win, really.
Yeah. Even as a Forest fan, I don't even look at the league table anymore because it's getting, well, it's not depressing, but I can see that after the top two, you've got six or seven teams that could probably get into the playoffs if you go down as far as Fulham.
What do you mean? Our title hopes are gone? What are you on about?
Yeah, definitely.
joking, aren't you? Go on, where's your optimism?
Always got a chance. but like looking at this, there's like the mid table. Obviously, the no goers, they're not going anywhere. And then you've got the bottom, sort of seven or eight. I really don't want to talk about it, but
there's like, probably more to be fair.
Team that are just maybe looking down rather than up. Getting on to results, obviously Norwich beat Forest 5-1. We'll move on that one, yeah.
Let's just talk about Johnny Howson's goal.
Let's not,
because it was a worldie. Well, there has been so many good goals scored past this season.
I think the two goal of the season contenders have been scored past us. Dakar's volley and Howson's volley, just unreal, man.
Like, which one was better?
The technique on Howson's volley is far superior to Dakar's. The guy takes it on the he volleys it on the side, like he doesn't volley it like straight in front of him. He like side volleys it. It's an incredible strike. It's ridiculous.
I think Dukar's sheer power that he got behind the ball makes it look like a better strike.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
But I'm in agreement with you. Howson's was a better. It's harder to perform that.
Yeah, the technique is ridiculous. Like he will never score a goal like neither will Dukar, to be fair, but he will never score a volley like that again in his life, Howson. That was an unbelievable strike. And yeah, it had to come against us. It just opened our floodgates. Massively opened our floodgates up.
I can't believe we actually lost 5-1.
I know.
Like, looking at it, it's like we conceded 5 goals on Saturday.
Everything went wrong, though. But everything went wrong. We started slowly. Yeah. We conceded early. We lost our keeper to injury. We lost our captain to a red card. We'd never built into the game. And literally the only positive to take out of it is the fact McCormack scored.
And Jordan Smith played okay.
Played okay. But at the same time, it's like, it's just a lot of things went wrong in one day. Like, you can take a couple of them things happening, but all of them at the same time, it was always going to be a recipe for disaster. And yeah. I couldn't believe it because my phone was just pinging. It was going 1-0, 2-0, 3-0. I was like, Jesus Christ. I couldn't even listen to it. I was in my course for my work that I'm doing at the moment, like, and my phone was just going bzz, 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 bzz. I was thinking, what's going on? Pulled out of my pocket, 1-0, 2-0, 3-0, 16 minutes gone. I was like, excuse my French.
Touching on tomorrow's game, we won't talk about like the game in general, but just the goalkeeper position. Who starts tomorrow? Is it Stojkovic or is it Smith?
Smith.
I'd personally go Smith. He sounds like he was doing pretty much the similar things as Henderson, pulling off decent saves, catching the ball, distributing quickly, and Stojkovic doesn't
do
that.
I think that's
a
massive thing. I think Wicker's just touched on a massive point for me, is Stojkovic slows the game down, and Gary Brazil and Jack Lester seem to want to play at tempo. So if you're going to want to play at a tempo, you've got to put somebody in that's going to do the same thing. I mean, he might not be as confident in between the sticks as in like in certain situations he hasn't faced before at this level, but how else do you learn other than playing at this level? So
yeah, that's right.
I kind of look back at when Darlow got his chance for us, and it was a similar sort of situation. He was a similar age, and he's gone on to obviously be number one at Newcastle now and do really good things. But another thing I want to talk about is Ipswich beating Aston Villa away, which is hilarious.
That is
for what reason is that hilarious?
It's hilarious. Well,
Villa had been unbeaten at home all season, and Ipswich, I mean, Ipswich aren't really that great this season, are they?
No, they were pretty poor when they went there.
We beat them, and they're far worse, I'm sure.
Yeah, definitely. I didn't know Villa had been unbeaten at home all season. That's an amazing record for a team so low in the league.
That was their thing that they were clinging on to this season, because they've been so dire.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that proves a big point to us as well, that like, was it such a big victory? Was it such a big turning point for us against Villa if they're losing at home to Ipswich?
I think it was because of the talent that they got in the team. I know it's a new squad, and that's probably why they're losing games at the moment. But they've got, you know, arguably one of the best strikers or the best striker in the Championship, and Scott Hogan. They then got, you know, two quality players in midfield. Let's face it, in Lansbury and Hourihane. And then they spent a lot of money like Newcastle as well. So I do think it was a big turning point at the time because of
the
circumstances.
Or do you think that victory for us has dented them in that respect then? As in like, it's opposite to what I just said. As in like, it's a turning point for their season rather than our season, in the respect that they now are shitting themselves.
I think their turning point was when they lost to Brentford on the Tuesday. Had they got a result like that and not lost 3-0, I think they probably would have come to the City Ground with a bit of confidence and played a little bit better. I mean, they did go 1-0 up, and for the first 20-25 minutes, they looked a better team, and then all of a sudden we kind of turned it on them and kept all the ball, and then obviously the red card didn't help them. But yeah, I do think if the Brentford result is different, I do think Villa play a different game against us. And they're probably going to be, they would have been maybe 6 points or 7 points above us at the time, but right now they're on the same as us. So, yeah, can look at it both ways, I guess.
Yeah.
Going down the road to Derby County, they were 3-0 down and somehow got a draw.
We were obviously 3-0 down at half time, and here in Derby we're 3-0 down at half time, at least like covered some of the cracks, but fair play to him for coming back and drawing 3-3.
Yeah, listen.
They might be disappointed not to have actually won that game in the end by the times with that momentum going their way, you know what I mean?
They just dug their heels in, and because I think a huge slice of that is they were in front of their own crowd, which are expecting a lot of things. I mean, it's different being away, obviously you've got your fans there, but there's not that cauldron of like complete surrounded by animosity and hatred to the way you're playing, so you have to step it up. Because where we were at Carrow Road, surrounded by fans that were buzzing by how crap we were playing. Do you know what I mean? So it's like it's harder to pick yourself up when people are just jeering you and getting on, not even getting on your back, just like willing you to play worse and worse if you want. So that's like when they're at home, all their fans are doing is just aiming hatred at their players and booing and whatnot, and the only way they can play is better. That's the way I see it.
I'm just going to touch over the rest of the results because there's obviously in the Championship a lot more games. Huddersfield beat Queen's Park, QPR, 2-1 on the weekend, probably keeping their chances of maybe getting automatic promotion alive. Do you think Huddersfield will do it this season? Do you think they might, whether it be via playoffs or
potentially, definitely. I think Huddersfield play very good football, and the style would definitely not go amiss in the playoffs and get them into the playoffs. I definitely think that they're candidates.
Newcastle beat Wolverhampton 1-0 on the weekend as well in the late game, which is probably a massive, well, it is a massive result for them, especially with Brighton winning earlier on in the day. Those two teams there, it's starting to become quite interesting because they just, both teams are winning, and then when one draws, the other draws, it's very, no, I'm not sure. I'm excited because I want to see Brighton win the league instead of Newcastle.
I would like to see Brighton win the league.
Yeah, it would be nice. I think Houghton as well, would be like a personal thing for him, obviously, because he was at Newcastle, got them promoted, and then
got sacked,
obviously got rid of him while he was in the Premier League or whatnot. But I mean, I think one of the biggest shocks of this weekend was Cardiff beating Leeds United away. Leeds have been flying this season and really good at Elland Road. And Cardiff, who have gone there and beaten them. And actually, Cardiff, who were in the bottom three when Warnock took over and they played us, they're now like, they sit happily mid-table sort of thing and look like they're trotting along a bit now. And me and Danny got that absolutely... criticised when we went on this like other YouTube thing, and there was a load of Leeds fans, and we said Cardiff are actually a good side, they've got a good manager, and they laughed at us.
Yeah.
Cardiff are actually doing all right now.
Yeah, they did laugh at us.
Yeah.
But also at the same time, we said we didn't think Forest were too dissimilar to Leeds.
Yeah.
Oh God, that's probably why you got the stick.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. But at the time, we just beat Leeds 3-0.
Yeah.
True.
But anyway, that's beside the point.
Yeah. Other news, Fulham beat Wigan 3-2. The reason why I just sort of pointed that one out is because Fulham, like, you know, they're flying all of a sudden. We've got them obviously tomorrow. They're currently 6 points outside the playoffs. And there are obviously a bunch of teams there. They've got Norwich, you've got Derby. You could even say Barnsley, but I doubt they'll do anything.
And Preston.
Yeah, there's Preston down there too. You're sort of starting to fall really, really far down. Actually, no, Preston's the last team there, isn't it? Is there any teams there, in your guys' opinions, that can get into that playoffs? Or do you think the playoffs, the four teams in there at the moment, will stay as it is?
I think it depends on like how the fixtures fall, really. It depends if they've got to play each other, or if they've got to play the lower end of the table sides. And I mean, I'm really hoping that by the time Derby County come to the City Ground in the next few weeks, that they need to beat us in order to maintain that like chase, and we spoil it for them.
That would be really, really good, wouldn't it? It's sad though, because that's probably the last thing we've got to cling on for this season. It's crazy. Yeah.
It is, but like, that's how it is at the moment this season for us. Like, if that's all we've got to cling on for, then that's how it is.
So be it, yeah. Well, definitely.
We've got to play for it then, haven't we? If that's what we've got to cling on to, if that's our only thing. That's the only trophy we can win this season, by the way, the Brighton Cup trophy.
So I think they should go to penalties as well. Just outside the playoffs, I think it's like of those teams that have all come to the City Ground, I think Norwich and Derby are probably the two sides I would say that could get into those playoff spots. I think Fulham, Barnsley and Preston weren't that great against us, in all honesty.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, I think Preston are like the most sort of solid team. They, you know, they've got a really good goalkeeper in Chris Maxwell, and they've got some good players in their team. And they've got a manager as well.
Yeah, manager. Manager.
Barnsley, I wasn't at the game, but obviously they scored a worldie late on. And then we beat them 5-3. In December or November, like late on.
That goal was
when I watched on the TV, they looked pretty good then, but I'm not sure. With Norwich and Derby, obviously they're there every single season. Obviously Norwich, even more so, because you know, obviously you got promoted.
I can see Norwich getting into the playoffs. I can see Norwich getting into the playoffs. I mean, they've turned a corner. They were like, Adam was saying to me the other day, like they were on about sacking that Alex Neil, and they've stuck with him. The board, and credit to the board, like Adam said to me as well, like for sticking with him, and they're reaping the rewards now. They're starting to play well. This philosophy is coming through, and they're all buying into it. And there's additions. Nelson Oliveira is a great player for them as well. He links up so well, he'll turn a man very, very easily. And they've got goal scoring midfielders, and you can't really ask for more than that. So, yep, they're flying. They are flying at the moment, and I can only see them progressing. So, they will take advantage of any team that messes up in the playoffs.
Definitely. I think the only team I can sort of see maybe not making it is Reading, only because in the last couple of years they've been not poor, but they've not been there. They've not been anywhere near. I mean, obviously Leeds is very similar, but I do think Leeds are... They're pretty
Leeds
much
are
nailed
strong,
on.
Very strong.
Leeds are a strong side. They're a good team. They've got a really good manager there as well, and they've finally stuck with a manager as well. So yeah, I think if anyone falls out for Norwich or Derby, it'll be Reading.
Yeah, I agree.
Adam, anything else? You got anything to add there?
Not with the Championship. There was obviously news out of Scotland, and it is to do with us. Obviously, it's always to do with Forest. But Mark Warburton and his team apparently resigned from Rangers.
Whoa.
Yeah, I heard this. The strangest thing for me about this is Rangers put up that on their website, on their official, that Mark Warburton had resigned, this, that and the other. And then the next thing you know, Mark Warburton's come out and said, I never resigned.
Yeah, apparently the confusion is coming from that. Apparently Fawaz had made an approach for Warburton, and this is just before he made Brazil permanent, like for the rest of the season,
right.
and Warburton had basically said, "Well, I'll hand in my resignation at Rangers and come to Forest." That was apparently what the story was, and then it's just all like collapse sort of thing, and Fawaz has decided to keep Brazil to the end of the season.
He's like a horrible woman. He's like a home wrecker. Like, he's just
it doesn't
gone
sound
straight
that ridiculous
into Rangers
to
and gone,
me, though.
Come here. And then he's gone, yes, son. And then he's gone, no, I'm only joking, mate. And he's gone, he's got no job, bless him. He's got a family to feed, poor Mark Warburton. Look at him, poor bloke.
The thing is, I'd have him. He's a really good manager.
No, he is. No, I don't understand what's broken down. I really don't. I mean,
I don't know how much of that is true, that story, but it wouldn't surprise me if it was, because it's Fawaz, and he's an idiot.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's all I've got to say on that matter, really.
Do we guys want to talk about League One, or do we not know anything about it?
I know absolutely nothing about it, really.
I don't really know too much, in all fairness.
I'm the same.
Fleetwood are flying.
Can we just touch on our neighbours down the road of Notts County? They signed Kevin Nolan in the transfer window and Shola Amiobi.
Man.
And they won again.
Yeah. If that's a marquee signing, then my Christ.
It's for League 2 though, isn't it? Sure, I mean,
yeah, it, big signing that, in all fairness. I mean, don't get me wrong, he's never been a good player in my opinion, but yeah, I do think, looking at League 2, I follow League 2 more than League 1 because I got an interest in Grimsby. Don't ask me why, but yeah, anyway, Notts County, when I listen to them on the radio, obviously when I get to Nottingham, because I can't tune in until I get there, when I listen to the games and things, even the commentators look like seem down all the time about them. Are they really that bad? Like, I know they're 22nd on 29 points, but
I think they are that bad. It's a hard ship to steady, very hard ship to steady, and I think Colin Slater has seen a lot of dross come and go from that Notts over the years, from that Notts County dressing room. And I think this season's like hit the tip of the iceberg for him, really. I think he's just boiled over, and you just hear him getting more and more angry, like in his interviews, where he's just short and sharp with the managers. So I'm hoping Kevin Nolan has come in, fresh ideas, fresh out the game. Well, he's not out the game, he's still playing, he's playing manager. He's played in the Premier League for a long, long time, and he should hopefully have modern philosophies, and I hope he brings that to Notts County, because I have no hatred or any animosity towards Notts County as a Forest fan. I hope they do well, and I hope they get out of the predicament they're in.
I have nothing to add on that, because I don't live in the area.
I'm in agreement with that.
Yeah.
Shola!
looking at Notts County from an outsider's perspective, obviously me living miles and miles away, every time I come to Nottingham and I see the City Ground and I see Meadow Lane, I see Notts County as being a big club. I mean, are they? I mean, I don't really know the history too well. I mean,
they're the oldest football club in the league, mate.
Yeah, I know that as much, but in terms of players that they've had in the past, I don't know any of their history of, you know, other than them being the oldest club.
Well, the thing is, what you got to remember is, I think it was it late mid-90s, late 90s? Or, I think, or was it late 80s? I can't remember. Notts County were better than Forest. they were in Division 1 and they were above Forest at some point. And they had people, is it Tommy Johnson? Tommy Johnson, was it?
Yeah, Tommy Johnson.
Tommy
yeah.
Johnson, and they had some good players. And obviously, it didn't materialise into bigger and better things for Notts County. I mean, Sam Allardyce was in charge of them, and Neil Warnock was in charge of them as well. So they've got a good managers in charge of them. So Neil Warnock was of the era where they were in Division 1. So he was probably their most recent successful era. But generally, as the history goes, apart from being the oldest league club in the world, that's about as far as it goes, I think. Really,
yeah. Unfortunately,
but they are a big club when you come to that sort of league. I mean, they've got a 20,000+ capacity stadium for League Two, so that's a big
that's what
stadium.
I mean, like. You know, I park in Meadow Lane in the car park to get to the home games. I just walk past the ground every home game, and I'm like, "Bloody hell, it's a massive ground for where they're based, especially."
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. But anyway. when you come on the sides of the club, it's difficult to say really, because you could always say they're a sleeping giant like Forest are if you go to the right back in the history books. But over recent times, I'd say Notts County are probably where they actually deserve to be without sounding harsh.
Fair enough. Right, moving on. Thanks for the education, boys. Right.
If it was education.
So, Adam, we've got two segments or new segments. Do you want to go first, or do you want me to go first?
I'll go first. I'll kick this off. So, I don't know if you enjoy The Walking Dead, Kyle, but me and Danny do quite a lot, and it's back today. It's back tonight.
Okay. Right.
But so honest,
I've never seen it.
Right,
but you know the concept of zombies and stuff like that, don't you?
Yeah.
So what my thing was is, if you could have a five man like zombie killing squad that were footballers, from any, they could be dead, alive, retired, whatever. Who would your five people be and why? So
okay,
I'll go to Wetton first. If you've got five people.
Oh, right, okay. Right, okay. I will probably kick it off with Vinny Jones. Because Vinny Jones was just an absolute animal. The guy was part of the original crazy gang of Wimbledon. They took no prisoners. I mean, I don't know if you lot have seen, but the FA Cup final that Wimbledon won against Liverpool. Liverpool had a renowned hard man, McMahon, I think it was, in centre mid. And in the first minute, Vinny Jones just flies through him like a hot knife through butter, just sives him down. Probably one of the worst tackles you've ever seen. And obviously, it was in a time where they didn't care, so they just got up and ran off. But I mean, at the time, this McMahon, he was like a feared hard man of Liverpool. And Vinny Jones just took him out, and he must have only been about 18, 19 years old. He wasn't very old. And from then, he was just a nutcase. So that's my number one. Vinny Jones would be...
I think that's quite a good one.
Yeah, would be my absolute number one. I would probably go back to Jack Charlton. Jack Charlton would be in there. The guy was an absolute animal, took no prisoners. He was in the Leeds side that dominated English football for a little bit. Manager. Can't remember the manager.
I don't know his name. Forgot.
Oh, for God's sake!
Come on, brains, Adam.
Him and Brian Clough were at it all the time. Don Revy.
Don Revy, that's one.
But anyway, he played for him, and he was just an animal, but a good centre back, but hard bugger. So he's going in number two. My third would quite probably have to be, for my sentimental reasons, of Stuart Pearce. He just took no prisoners either. Probably one of England's best left backs ever. A model professional, but also a tough, very hard tackling player.
Would you say he'd be like the leader of your pack?
No, Vinnie Jones would be the leader. 100%.
Oh, yeah, God, 100%. Clash. Clash.
That would be a huge clash.
100%. Yeah, but they're not clashing, they're working together. They're just
not. They're shooting each other.
Yeah, well. But anyway, Stuart Pearce is going in there, followed by Roy Keane. Roy Keane just goes without saying, I would like to put Patrick Vieira in there, but them two would just probably end up tearing each other's heads off. So I just couldn't do that. So Roy Keane goes in for me because he played for Forest as well, and he was a brilliant player. He was actually a very good footballer as well. But hard man style, got to be Roy Keane. And my last one, this is where it gets hard for me because I'm trying to think of harder players. I would, do you know what? Just purely because of his kung fu abilities, Eric Cantona has got to go in there because he was amazing at kicking people that didn't deserve to be kicked. So anyone come near him, their heads would get clean kung fu kicked off the shoulders. So yeah, Eric Cantona makes my five. So one, absolutely brilliant. 1 to 5, I can't remember.
you went for
Jack Charlton, Cantona, Vinnie Jones, Stuart Pearce, and
Roy Keane.
Yeah, right. My five. Oh my God, I'm not sure I'm going to follow this. I'm going to start with my lead. Then I'm going to go John Terry. I want someone who's going to be loud mouthed and just knows what he's on about. He doesn't really know what he's on about, but anyway, he's quite interesting, I guess. I'm just going off on this. I'm just making.
I'll tell you what. You better hope there's no female zombies, mate, because then you're sidetracked.
Yeah, true, definitely. I mean, I definitely don't want Ryan Giggs then. second, I will go with Adebayo Akinfenwa because he's just a pure monster. And then, you know, if we're gonna have to start running away from him, then he's gonna be the slowest, so they're gonna have a lot to feed on from him. So we've got a little bit more time thinking strategically, you know. Third, I'm going to have Kasper Schmeichel because he's good with his hands, so he just might knock some out, just give him a good whack. Fourth, I'm going to go with Thierry Henry because I want a bit of finesse in there. I want a bit of, you know, some imagination, you know, a bit of creativity. That's all I want. You know, I don't want just like straight up like what you used to get on Call of Duty Zombies or back in the day on World at War. We used to like literally just stand in the corner and shoot away. I want to go running around a bit. And then last but not least, I'm going to go with Kante because he's everywhere.
Kante.
Oh, I was going to choose Kante.
We've got a very modern selection.
Mine was right. So my first one was going to be N'Golo Kante for your scavenging. Because he could just run. He'd just run everywhere.
Yeah.
And then I was going to go with Peter Schmeichel. Purely because surely like a goalkeeper would have had to punch a football in their day. And they would have definitely punched a bloke in the face.
Yeah, definitely.
So like they could punch a zombie in the face. That'd be great.
Another player could be Ollie Kahn.
I was going to put Luis Suarez in. But then I thought he'd actually probably be a better zombie.
Yeah. Biting.
I think someone I'd go for, someone that's a proper hard man, would be like Duncan Ferguson.
Stands no chance against Vinny, mate.
Duncan Ferguson would probably try, at least.
He'd give it a great go, wouldn't he?
He definitely would.
He'd back down.
Duncan Ferguson, Peter Schmeichel, and N'Golo Kante.
He'd wear a kilt and nothing under it.
I'd go for another hard man would have to probably be like, I think I'd go for Patrick Vieira, seeing that you've gone for Roy Keane, whatever. Ha! Just because, like, but he's French as well. He's got some suave, hasn't he? He'd be all right.
You can't think of anybody else that's harder than Patrick Vieira.
God, I could think of that. Like,
he did. And then I think a final one would have to be, I'd want to go with someone like that's got like a bit of pace, so they could like at least run away. But then like they'd be able to be like a distraction almost, a bit like N'Golo Kante could be, except I think, or a bit different. And I think I'd go for someone a bit like weird, a bit like Gareth Bale. Don't ask me why. I just think that's how I think I'd go for.
Well, that was weird.
That was very strange. I mean, if you want to keep that up, then yeah. I'm fine with that. That was all right. That was pretty. That was so interesting. Like,
very different.
What?
Yeah, no. What has just happened? What has just happened?
I don't know. I feel lost.
Watch this next segment.
Right. So this segment, we're going to turn it on to a bit of a sad note, but a positive note. Anyway, I'm going to start something up called Football Hero or a Weekly Football Hero. I'm not sure we're going to title it, but we're going to go with what I see from the last week or from, well, because this is the first week from ever, because this one's not new as such. A footballing hero or a sporting hero or someone involved with our game who I think deserves to have a mention or a shout out. So this week, so for week one, I've gone for Bradley Lowry. Now, we've probably all heard about it. You know, the fight he's currently going through, and, you know, obviously we would want no one to go through what he's going through currently. However, you know, don't want to bore you with all the story and things like that. But there aren't just him. There are a couple of others as well that I literally just from 20 seconds of just searching Bradley Lowry, I saw suggestions. Another young lad, Frankie Sherwood, who is, I believe, a Newcastle United fan, who is a very similar age. I think he's 4 or 5 and is, you know, got a very, very similar story to Bradley Lowry, but just hasn't really been put in the spotlight as such. Not that he's going to be put in the spotlight with us because we've got 5 listeners, but still. And then we've got Hope. I'm not sure what Hope's surname is, but there's a page called High Five for Hope or something like that, which again is a very similar story, involved with the cancer neuroblastoma. I think that's how you say it. I'm not sure. But I think they deserve a shout out because, you know, they're going through quite a traumatic time, but at the same time, they're very positive stories in our sport. I think, you know, it's been the highlight of our season, especially with Bradley Lowry. You know, getting goal of the month in December and things like that. And just his story in general, I just think is a very positive thing.
The thing with Brad Lowry as well, which I saw the other day, I think I was on Twitter. Jermaine Defoe seems to have been completely like mesmerised by this little boy who's going through absolute, like you've already said, you wouldn't wish it on your worst enemy probably. And Jermaine Defoe's was like lying in bed with him in the hospital while he was sleeping and stuff, and it's just like one of those things where footballers, you don't see him do that sort of thing, and Jermaine Defoe's obviously gone out of his way to keep going to see him and make sure he's all right, which is really nice.
That's the legend that is Jermaine Defoe. I think he's a proper pro.
I think,
you know,
Sunderland,
what he's doing.
I think Sunderland as a football club need to get like a massive pat on the back from the whole football community with the way they supported the whole thing. I mean, you touched on other young children and even adults that are suffering from it, from any disease that inhibits their ability to live as long as they probably want to. But you have to give credit to Sunderland Football Club for putting him into the limelight in a way, because doing that on a major scale, because Sunderland is the only club in that area, is in Sunderland. Do you know what I mean? Like,
exactly.
So everybody pinpoints everything onto Sunderland. So anytime any football goes that way, it's all on Sunderland. So anything that they broadcast through their media, through their social networking tools that they have, and the people at the club that they pay them to market things, then they're going to get the story out there. And I think it's commendable to Sunderland that they've put this story out there and managed to raise so much money to prolong this young lad's life.
Definitely. Credit to Everton as well, who have obviously been involved.
Oh, yeah, sorry, absolutely.
You know, they don't have to, and they have.
They put £200,000 towards it, didn't they?
Yeah, that's right. It's amazing to sort of see. But those three stories alone are all in the North East, which is quite bizarre in a way. All three cases, well, those three cases to be it's, I don't know, it's such a specific area. I don't know. Anyway,
I mean, it's a nice thing that you're touching on, really. I mean, for the five listeners that listen to this, then you're aware now. Then you're aware now of the situation. But another thing I'd like to mention is that not long ago, I think it may have been, it would have been last year now. I don't know when last year, but it must have been last season. But Notts County were one of the first football clubs to introduce a specific room for children with autism or a certain illness that can't stand noise. So when
Sunderland did this as well.
Sunderland as well. Well, there you go then.
Yeah.
And when a crowd reacts to a football incident, whether it be a goal, sending off, anything that makes the crowd roar, it can really affect these people, children, adults, whoever it may be. And they really lose their crap, in another word, and they literally go nuts, and it's hard to control them. So these rooms are built specifically with the design to stop that noise, so that they can watch the game in comfort and in peace, and celebrate the goals and incidents in their own way, rather than having to listen to the roar of the crowd.
Fantastic. Yeah, I think that's a massive thing, obviously, because you want to include everyone in football, don't you? I mean,
yeah, definitely.
You've got teams for the blind and the deaf. I don't know how the deaf, like how they do the refereeing calls or anything like that. but like, you want to include everyone because it's, like everyone says, it's meant to be the beautiful game. Obviously, sometimes it's not. It has its ugly sides, but I think a lot of the things that go on that are good aren't always publicised enough.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of the time, media, especially in our country, really go after the negative sides of football.
Yeah, definitely. 100%.
Yeah.
Which is a shame.
Yeah, definitely.
It's a massive shame.
Right, I think we've nailed that on the head.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, should we wrap it up? Shall we not?
I don't know. I'm not sure if I don't think they can contain themselves, the listeners.
Yeah, I think we will. Yeah, so if you've obviously enjoyed listening to our 51 minutes of tripe, then please leave us a positive comment in iTunes. We've had one good 5-star review. I think we've had another as well today, so that's sick. But if you can share it, like I said before, get your nan to listen to it if you really want to, like, get these listeners up, eh? But yeah, thanks very much for listening, and we shall see you next week. And also shout out to Daniel for coming on today.
Thank you, sirs, for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Cheers, guys.